Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Chapter 31. The Quimby Manuscripts. Few stranger or more contradictory controversies have ever raged in the realm of literature or philosophy than that which has surrounded the manuscripts of Phineas P. Quimby and the allegation that the teaching of Mary Baker Eddy is entirely derived from them. Commencing in 1883, it still persists. The whole question, of course, depends on an understanding of what Mrs. Eddy actually taught. The protagonists of the claims of Phineas Quimby maintain that she taught just what Quimby taught, while at the same time insisting that if Quimby could have heard what she was teaching, he would have turned in his grave. Thus, George Quimby, in a letter dated November 11, 1901, quoted by Horatio Dresser in his book, The Quimby Manuscripts, is quite emphatic on the point. The religion which she teaches certainly is hers, for which I cannot be too thankful, for I should be loath to go down to my grave feeling that my father was in any way connected with Christian Science. As has been seen, Mrs. Eddy for many years, certainly from 1862 to the time of her first class in Lynn in 1871, unhesitatingly attributed her teaching to Quimby. It is possible, however, from her first association with him, that what she was attributing to Quimby was her own interpretation of what he was teaching, and not at all what he would have regarded as his teaching if he had understood the differences involved in her interpretation of it. In any case, she steadily, if quite unconsciously, grew further and further away from him. But it was not until she saw, as the result of her first class in Lynn, the incompatibility of her views with the Quimby system of manipulation, that she realized not only what she was teaching was not what Quimby taught, but that her great task in the future was to be freeing herself and her teaching from the essentials of Quimby's doctrine. What it took Mrs. Eddy 9 years to discover, the protagonists of Quimby never discovered. And Julius Dresser, who first publicly raised the issue in 1883, had no doubts at all on the subject. Julius Dresser, it will be remembered, was the man who first brought Mrs. Eddy and Quimby together. It was he who came back to Dr. Vale's water cure establishment at Hill with a wonderful story of his own cure by the new doctor in Portland, and about many other cures. Mary, of course, knew all about it. Indeed, as has been noted, it was with the express determination that Hill should only be a stopping place on the way to Portland and Quimby that she consented to Abigail's earnest solicitations that she go to Dr. Vale's establishment. That was back in 1862. And during the 4 years of her association with Quimby, which followed, she had been in constant touch with Julius Dresser. And it was, of course, to Dresser that she sent her appeal for help after Quimby had died and she was struggling at Lynn to complete her recovery from a well-nigh fatal accident. Shortly after Quimby's death, Dresser, who had married, went west, and for some years he and his wife practiced a form of mental healing out there. By 1881 to 1882, word of the new system being taught in Boston reached him. And when he found that the Mrs. Eddy, who was identified with the movement, was the Mary Patterson he had known in Portland, he determined to make his way east again and see what was going forward. His first impression before he set out was possibly that Mrs. Eddy was making a success of Quimbyism, and remembering her regard for himself and the appeal she had made to him for help, he may have thought that he might as well have his share in any success that was being achieved. But he did not approach Mrs. Eddy directly after his arrival in Boston. He decided to have all the facts before he made any move. And these facts, when he discovered them, were not at all to his liking. As the result of judicious inquiry and sundry visits to Hawthorne Hall, all he could see in Mrs. Eddy's teaching was something very like an apostasy from Quimby. As George Quimby was to write several years later, the teaching was all too evidently her own, but it ought to be the teaching of Quimby. The possibility that what Mrs. Eddy was teaching was something she herself had evolved never occurred to him, apparently. Mrs. Eddy, the Mary Patterson, who for 4 years had been associated with Quimby and himself, ought to be teaching Quimbyism, and that was all there was about it as far as Julius Dresser was concerned. If she was not teaching Quimbyism, then she must be teaching something fraudulent, and in any event was clearly guilty in some inexplicable way of plagiarism. Julius Dresser opened his campaign in a roundabout fashion. He did not enter the field in person, but actually or fictionally in the guise of one A.O., who, under date of February 8, 1883, wrote a long letter to the Boston Post. After declaring that many would remember with interest the late Dr. P.P. Quimby of Portland, Maine, who so successfully practiced for about 20 years the mental method of treating disease, which is now claiming so much attention from all classes and is so widely accepted as the surest and best method of eradicating disease, A.O. goes on to mention that at the time Dr. Quimby was practicing, his method was new to the world, and that although he did a vast amount of good, he had, like all minds that take the lead, to bow to the judgment of smaller minds and meekly accept the title of humbug, which ignorance always bestows on wisdom that it cannot understand. In speaking with a gentleman on this subject a short time since, he continues, I was surprised and pleased to learn that he owed his life to the wisdom of that good man, that he had been a member of the same household for a length of time, and also a student of Dr. Quimby. This gentleman informs me that Dr. Quimby did a great amount of writing on the subject of mental healing, or his theory, which he termed Science of Health. Having thus made it perfectly clear who was meant, to Mrs. Eddy at any rate, A.O. advances to a direct attack. "Some parties," he says, "healing through a mental method which they claim to have discovered, did, in reality, obtain their first thoughts of this truth from Dr. Quimby, and have added their own opinions to the grain of wisdom thus obtained, presenting to the people a small amount of wheat mixed with a great quantity of chaff." Dr. Quimby was, in many respects, a wonderful man. He feared nothing, and he cared to do anything that his wisdom taught him was right. He was no respecter of persons, and upheld only truth, without regard to whence it came. The opinions of the people with regard to himself and his ideas were of no importance in his eyes. When we see a few like him in the same field of action, who, while they are in the world, are yet not of it, we shall see sin and sickness decreasing instead of increasing. Some 10 days later, namely on February 19, 1883, there appeared in the Boston Post an answer to this letter. It was signed E.G. Whether these initials concealed the identity of Mrs. Eddy herself, as internal evidence would seem to indicate, or the letter was the work of one of her students, as is not impossible, certain it is that the letter itself lays the foundation for all further repudiation of similar charges. If E.G. at times seems ungenerous to Quimby, it must be remembered that after all Mrs. Eddy had gone through in her own mental struggles and through the many misdemeanings in her students attributed to Quimby's doctrine, her general estimate of his teachings must have undergone a great change. She still regards and speaks of him, as she always does, even under the most trying provocation, with kindness and gratitude. But she no longer regards him as the inspired prophet, such as he had appeared to her in the Portland days 20 years before, when surrounded by the aura of her own thought. And so E.G. writes, using the labored editorial we of that day, she begins mildly, professing interest in A.O.'s letter, because it had also been her privilege to know the late Dr. Phineas P. Quimby, who died many years ago, and whom we regarded very highly. He was, she continued, a contemporary of the noted mesmerist Dr. Newton, and often amused us with his unique descriptions of their mesmeric performances. He, Dr. Quimby, told us one evening on our way to a lecture at the City Hall in Portland that he would exhibit some of his powers to us in the hall. Accordingly, after we were seated, he said to us, "I shall set them to coughing." And immediately, one after another commenced coughing, until the assembly in general joined in chorus, longer or shorter, according to directions. Then all of a sudden, the coughing stopped, but our laughing was not over, for immediately the people commenced sneezing, as if a sudden coryza had seized them, and pocket handkerchiefs were in quick requisition. having thus created the atmosphere, evidently desired that in which the subject should not be taken too seriously, E.G. gets down to the real issue. Dr. Quimby's method of treating the sick was manipulation. After immersing his hands in water, he rubbed the head, etc. He never called his practice a mental method of treating diseases, to our knowledge, and we knew him and his history. He was very successful in many cases of lameness. We asked him several times if he had any system aside from manipulation and mesmerism of treating disease, and he always evaded the subject. We were his patient, but he never gave us any further information relating to his practice, but always said, "It is a secret of my own, and I have thought best not to divulge it." After treating the sick, he would retire to a side room and note with pen the especial case with such other paraphrase as he thought best. This copy he gave to certain individuals to bring out, or as he said, put into shape. His scribblings were fragmentary, but sometimes very interesting. He requested us to transform them frequently and to give them different meanings, which we did. He never took a student, to our knowledge, or gave information that was practical of his healing. He called his scribblings essays, but never the science of health. Science and Health is a work of Mrs. Mary B.G. Eddy, issued in 1875. She discovered the science of healing embodied in that work after years of practical proof through homeopathy, that mind instead of matter is the principle of pathology, and finally sealed her proof by a severe casualty from which she recovered through her exercise of mental power over the body after the regular physicians had pronounced her case incurable. A grateful multitude acknowledge the blessings of her mental system of treating disease. Perhaps the following, in the words of her husband, the late Dr. Asa G. Eddy, best express it. Mrs. Eddy's works are the outgrowths of her life. I never knew so unselfish an individual. E.G. 5 days later, Julius Dresser replies, and this time comes at last right out into the open. On February 24th, he writes once again to the Boston Post, characterizing E.G.'s letter as a tissue of falsehoods, accusing Mrs. Eddy of plagiarism and ingratitude, and winding up with what he evidently regards as a knockout blow, a republishing of Mrs. Eddy's pitiful plea to him for help in 1866. If E.G. was ever a patient of Dr. Quimby's, as she claims, he says, and knew the history, she knows that her article above referred to is false from beginning to end. The undersigned is a quiet, humble citizen of Boston who seeks no controversy with anybody. But when he knows positively that truth is being outraged and dragged in the dirt, he will step forward and uphold the truth and let error become, as it always does, its own destroyer. As E.G. has maligned and belittled a good man who gave up his life for the cause of truth and actually died for sick people, I will call as a witness the same Mrs. Eddy whom E.G. speaks of. This lady was a patient and a student of the late Dr. P.P. Quimby of Portland, Maine, in the winter of 1862 and 63. She was then known as Mrs. Patterson, wife of Dr. Patterson, dentist. The writer of the communication was a patient and student of Dr. Quimby's at different times, from the year 1860 to 1865, including the period when Mrs. Patterson Eddy was acting in the same capacity. There are other persons now in Boston who were likewise patients of Dr. Quimby at the same time, and who understand all the facts herein related. Now, Mrs. Patterson Eddy knows positively that the assertions of E.G. in last Monday's post are a tissue of falsehoods. There are only some shades of truth on mere minor points contained in E.G.'s article. Mrs. Patterson Eddy knows that the late Dr. P.P. Quimby of Portland, Maine, was actually and solely originator and founder of a mental method of treating diseases. She knows also that he called his peculiar theory the science of health, and that from him she got his name for the doctrine incorporated in her books. Dr. Quimby never had regular students, but to such of his patients as could understand him, he freely explained his life-giving doctrine. For it was no secret, and such ones had access also to a portion of his writings and copied them, as did Mrs. Patterson Eddy. Such persons as herself and others of an inquiring mind were therefore in a sense students of the doctor, and they made the most of their opportunities. At the time of the severe casualty, stated by E.G. as having happened to Mrs. Patterson Eddy, the latter wrote to the undersigned a letter, in part as follows. 2 weeks ago, I fell on the sidewalk and struck my back on the ice, and was taken up for dead. Came to consciousness amid a storm of vapors from cologne, chloroform, ether, camphor, etc. But to find myself the helpless cripple I was before I saw Dr. Quimby. The physician attending said I had taken the last step I ever should. But in 2 days I got out of bed, alone, and will walk. But yet I confess I am frightened, and out of the nervous heat my friends are forming, spite of me, the terrible spinal affection from which I have suffered so long and hopelessly. Now, can't you help me? I believe you can. I write this with this feeling. I think that I could help another in my condition if they had not placed their intelligence in matter. This I have not done, and yet I am slowly failing. Won't you write me if you will undertake for me, if I can get to you? Respectfully, Mary M. Patterson. This letter is in the handwriting of Mrs. Patterson Eddy and can be seen by the truth-loving readers of the Post by calling at my office at number 14 Chester Square, Boston. At the same place, other papers and persons can be consulted to prove the statements above made. Do not take my word as evidence, reader, nor that of anybody else. Talk is too cheap. Call and get the facts. When Dr. Quimby's writings shall be given to the world in print, it will then be seen whether E.G. has correctly called them mere scribblings, or whether truly they are the master delineations of a science of truth and health that shall become the healing of nations. J.A. Dresser. To this letter, on February 23, 1883, Mrs. Eddy replied over her own name. She's quite clearly not at all disconcerted. She reasserts E.G.'s original statement and declares emphatically that far from being a tissue of falsehoods, they are strictly true for all time. She states, "We had laid the foundation for mental healing before we ever saw Dr. Quimby. We're an homeopathist without a diploma, owing to our aversion to the dissecting room. We made our first experiments in mental healing about 1853, when we were convinced that mind had a science, which, if understood, would heal all diseases. We were then investigating that science, but never saw Dr. Q until 1862. Mr. Dresser's statement that Mrs. Eddy knows positively that the assertions of E.G. in last Monday's Post are a tissue of falsehoods is untrue. We answer for all time that those assertions were strictly true. We never were a student of Dr. Quimby's, and Mr. Dresser knows that. Dr. Q never had students to our knowledge. He was a humanitarian, but a very unlearned man. He never published a work in his life, was not a lecturer or teacher. He was somewhat of a remarkable healer, and at the time we knew him, he was unknown as a mesmerist. We were one of his patients. He manipulated his patients. But possibly back of his practice he had a theory in advance of his method, and as we now understand it, and have since discovered, he mingled that theory with mesmerism. We knew him about 20 years ago and aimed to help him. We saw he was looking in our direction and asked him to write his thoughts out. He did so, and then we would take that copy to correct and sometimes so transform it that he would say it was our composition, which it virtually was. But we always gave him back the copy and sometimes wrote his name on the back of it. At Swampscott, Massachusetts, in 1866, we recovered in a moment of time from a severe accident considered fatal by the regular physician and regained the internal action that had stopped and the use of our limbs that were palsied. But the minds around us at that time were unacquainted with our mental theory. One individual of strong intellectual power and little spirituality even occasioned us some momentary fears of our ability to hold on to this wonderful discovery. In one of these moments of fear, we wrote to Mr. Dresser. We sought for once the encouragement of one we believed friendly, also with whom we had conversed on Dr. Q's method of healing. And when we said to him, It is a mystery. He replied to the effect that he believed no one but the doctor himself knew how he healed. But lo, after we had found mental healing, and nearly 20 years had elapsed, during which we have taught some 600 students and published 5,000 or 6,000 volumes on this subject, already circulated in the United States and Europe, the aforesaid gentleman announces to the public Dr. Quimby, the founder of mental healing. Shortly after the appearance of these letters, the Ahrens plagiarism case, as already described, came up before the courts. Mrs. Eddy won her case on all counts, and her claims to copyright in science and health were finally established. But the great Quimby controversy continued almost unabated for many years. It may be disposed of shortly here. In 1885, Mrs. Eddy published a pamphlet entitled Historical Sketch of Metaphysical Healing. In this, she once again covered the ground and reaffirmed her position. Then, in 1887, learning that an attempt was being made to secure the Quimby manuscripts for publication, she boldly carried the war into the enemy's camp by offering to publish the manuscripts herself at her own expense and to hand over the proceeds to the owner of the copyright on certain conditions. In due course, there appeared in the Portland papers the following notice. Important offer. Mr. George A. Quimby, son of the late Phineas P. Quimby, over his own signature and before a witness, stated in 1883 that he had in possession at that time all the manuscripts written by his father. I hereby declare to expose the falsehoods of parties publicly intimating that I have appropriated matter belonging to the aforesaid Quimby, that I will pay the cost of printing and publishing the first edition of these manuscripts with the author's name attached, provided that I am allowed first to examine said manuscripts, and that I find they were Mr. P.P. Quimby's own compositions and not mine that were left with him many years ago, or that they have not since his death in 1865 been stolen from my published works, and also that I am given the right to bring out this one edition under copyright of the owner of said manuscripts, and that all the money accruing from the sale of book shall be paid to said owner. Some of Mr. Quimby's purported writings, quoted by J. A. Dresser, were my own words, as nearly as I can recollect them. There is a great demand for my book, Science and Health. Hence, Mr. Dresser's excuse for the delay in publishing Quimby's manuscripts, namely, that this age is not sufficiently enlightened to be benefited by them, is lost. For if I have copied from Quimby, and my book is accepted, this acceptance creates a demand for his writings. Mary Baker G. Eddy. But George Quimby, who had the manuscripts in his possession, steadfastly refused to allow them to be published. He rather unconvincingly claimed that Mrs. Eddy's offer was only a device to get the manuscripts into her own hands, where they could easily be altered or destroyed. It could, of course, have been arranged for Mrs. Eddy to examine the manuscripts in the presence of a third party and make her decision there and then. However, they were not published and were not to be for many years more. Julius Dresser had to content himself with writing and publishing The True History of Mental Science, which he did in the spring of 1887. Mrs. Eddy replied in the journal. And the following year, George Quimby published an article on his father in the New England Magazine. In 1895, Julius Dresser and his wife, Annette Dresser, brought out a book, The Philosophy of P.P. Quimby. And since then, the controversy has continued down to the present day. After the publication of the famous manuscripts in 1921, however, it has lost much of the mystery, which up to that time had constituted its chief attraction. George Quimby's statement to the effect that Mrs. Eddy's teaching certainly is hers, and that he would be loath to think that his father was in any way connected with Christian Science, would seem to be final.